Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. Today we're going to talk about what's really happening in Iraq, and you can bet your bottom dollar that it's not what you're hearing on the traditional media outlets. And we'll be talking to somebody who knows the score and what's happening. My question is, will the wars never end? Will the warmongers never be satisfied until this entire planet has blown up? So anyway, my guest today is Dr. Dalia Wasfi. Dalia is an Iraqi-American physician and one badass peace activist. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Dalia, who's returning to the show. Dalia Wasfi, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
A pleasure to be back. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you back, but I'm just sorry that we have to speak under these circumstances with, the empire beating the drums again for more destruction in Iraq.
Absolutely. The destruction has been ongoing. There's attention to what's happening now, but it's not really framed in a truthful way. So That's a big problem. But thank you for trying to dissect down to the truth.
Well, obviously, we were talking before the interview that it's just disheartening because Obama has gotten away with so much since he's been president. And I'm not saying that, an active movement against what he's doing would have stopped anything, but at least we would be out there showing our opposition. Now, I want to talk about an article you just posted on Counterpunch called "Keep Calm and Trust Iraqis with Iraq." Now, I have been getting some communications with people, and they're telling me, but Cindy, this is different because I protested and I opposed the 2003 invasion and occupation, but I don't want to see Iraq fall to Islamic fundamentalists. First of all, is that what is happening? And secondly, like you wrote in your article, keep calm and trust Iraqis with Iraq. What business is it of ours? And can you just talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's been eye-opening and quite disappointing, though I think understandable, just the level of discomfort and suspicion around Muslims in general, that people can be so easily, just the concept of Islamic fundamentalism, that the seeds were planted and the roots run deep in this country of this fear of the other, and it's still working to trigger fear here. It's upsetting, but actually, if we didn't want Islamic fundamentalism in Iraq, then we shouldn't have handed the keys over to Nouri al-Maliki. We essentially brought a very conservative, in this country I would say right wing, but it's a very conservative fundamentalist party that Nouri al-Maliki belongs to. It's called the Dawah Party. And the Dawah Party started in Iraq, but found a safe haven in Iran. Some of them were exiled, some of them fled on their own, but the reason for that was that Saddam Hussein's rule was secular. And, parties like the Dawah Party, they're not the only ones, and multiple parties who were seeking theocratic rule, which is of course what has, been in Iran since 1979, and, they got support for that in Iran. So they grew very strong, or at least grew strength in Iran since their days of exile, I think mostly in the 1980s. And over that time, parties like this built up religious militias. Now, what happened once the U.S. invaded was the borders were left wide open, and for many years, the Shia majority in Iran wanted access to the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala in Iraq. And Saddam Hussein purposely shut down that travel route, again, to limit the amount of theocracy that was to spread in the country. And also everything was about maintaining and protecting the regime. So, after 2003, a lot of the parties, a lot of the followers, a lot of the militias, they all crossed the border into Iraq, and the southern part of Iraq, was greatly influenced and controlled, dominated by these militias. When we brought, Mariam Maliki to power, and just before him, Ibrahim Jaafari, and the constitution that we helped the quote-unquote independent Iraq write, this opened the door for Sharia law. It's a very conservative rule, and it's very sectarian. And what happened as we helped the training and arming of the new Iraqi army and police was that these militias, members of these militias, became incorporated into the army and police. And they have been acting as death squads in Iraq. So the big fear should have been back in 2003 for this very religious influence. What we're seeing now is the backlash of that. There are extremist groups on the other side, because we brought one group to power. There is, from cause and effect, you're going to find extremist groups emerging, like ISIS. But they are one of multiple groups who have set their political differences aside for now and are working together for the common goal of removing the Shia sectarian regime in Baghdad. It's messy. It's not fully neat and tidy, but this is what I'm hearing from the people on the ground.
Well, and you do have family there. Have you heard from your family yet?
Unfortunately, I just got through to them on the phone yesterday, so that was fortunately. Unfortunately, I had been communicating with them and with other contacts in Baghdad and in Mosul, but the Iraqi government shut the internet down about this time last week, I think. So that has definitely limited the flow of information. But I was super relieved yesterday. Just to get just 30 seconds, and then that was the phone call was cut. But just that was a gift to hear my cousin's voice, and I'm very grateful for that.
Did you ever believe that the Iraq War was over when Obama said it was over?
No. I knew there was still an American presence there, I'm not so naive that I think that the U.S. is going to give up the fight for for Iraq oil.
Mm-hmm.
Iraq, like the areas, the countries in the region, it's very strategic for geopolitical control and the transfer, the transport of resources. So, as my father said many years ago, may he rest in peace, he said, the land between the two rivers, the Tigris and Euphrates, was blessed with richness in oil, but the blessing became a curse because it was coveted by people from all over the world. We still maintained the forces at the quote-unquote embassy, which is really CIA headquarters in Iraq.
Right.
The last report I heard was that there's in total an estimated 20,000 Americans there. So no way are we out of Iraq. We will continue to. Instead of a primarily military occupation, it was transformed into an economic and political occupation.
Well, I think the only country we ever fully left after a long war was Vietnam, but that's because the Vietnamese literally kicked us out of there. And you said that ISIS was fighting against the Maliki regime, but is anybody fighting against the American occupational presence there?
I think that at this point, if my understanding is correct, that because the CIA operation, to my understanding, is it's more of a like an insidious control of civil society.
So
I think everybody sort of because the majority there's no one fighting U.S. forces anymore, and the bases were turned over to the Iraqi government. But resistance to the Iraqi government, in essence, is resistance to the U.S. government that installed it.
Right.
So I think it became clear. Some of my contacts called it a lot earlier than I saw it. But this idea that Iran had really sort of just assumed control, because it's an interesting balance that the United States likes the regime of Nouri al-Maliki because it supported it. We have this sectarian framework that we thrust down on the Iraqi people. And because of that, because of the destabilization of that and really the terror spread throughout Iraqi society because of it, that we have Western corporations that had previously been blocked out of Iraq's economy have now weaseled their way back in. At the same time, Iran is allied with Nouri al-Maliki's regime. They just completed an arms deal in February of this year, again because of these theocratic ties and the main cities of Najaf and Karbala. So Iran has what they want. The main thing they want. The Americans still have the main thing they want.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people who are caught and not getting just the basics of life are Iraqis. And neither side, that's not a priority for either side, which is why we're still hearing that the electricity is bad. And only a couple of weeks ago, my family had no water, and this is in the south. This is where if Shia are benefiting from the Shia regime, then you would expect that that those services are good. But there is negligence of the population at large, and this is a huge tragedy, especially in the summertime. It is now anywhere between 120 and 130 degrees a day during the hotness of the day in the desert. And they don't have electricity on days, and they don't have water on days. I mean, I can't even imagine it, but I don't know how my cousins survive it. I just know that they're so tough and so strong, and they endure. Even down to the little kids, they make it, and they endure.
Well, also, with the fact that Obama, one of his greatest accomplishments when he was running for re-election was that he ended the war in Iraq, and we already said that was false.
Mm-hmm.
But remind my listeners that Obama, his government, tried as hard as they could to make a status of forces agreement with Iraq so more troops could stay.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And I'm going to, because I love you, Cindy, I'm working so hard to abide by FCC regulations while discussing Obama. But I think the main push for the status of forces agreement, which ultimately it was the Maliki regime that said no, and the point of contention was that U.S. Forces have to be held accountable for their actions. And I don't know. My guess is that was really a push the big influence on the Maliki regime is Iran. And I think Iran was happy to see the U.S. push out of there. So, but there's no question that if Maliki had not rejected that status of forces agreement, that we would still, it wouldn't just be unofficial military presence, in and around the embassy. It would, most likely still be official, And even so, you know, that he's sending more forces now. It's a very small number, so I'm not sure. I don't have the military savvy to explain it, but these are special forces. I don't know. There's a lot of support, the warships that are being sent to the region. I think what we will see to prevent American deaths, which will be the real bad press, as compared to Iraqi deaths,
right.
So I think this will be an air assault. I think this will be drones being used. And from the news I'm hearing, some of the battles that are taking place now in the north are the Iraqi army shelling and mortaring, trying to regain what was taken by these armed forces, which again are an aggregate of multiple different groups. ISIS is present, but they are not in the lead. And if you think about it, we know ISIS as a fringe group with maybe several thousand followers, and it doesn't make sense that a few thousand undisciplined extremists could take control of a city the size of Mosul, which is at least 1.4 million. I've been told this figure is low, but it's at least over a million people, and then move on to hold that city and then move on to take other cities. It just doesn't make sense. And what I've heard from my sources is that there are local tribal militias that are providing security now in Mosul, but people are very, very afraid for what is to come next, because they expect the assault from Nouri al-Maliki as backed by the U.S. and Iran, as they've seen it in Anbar province with the constant bombardment, the continuing bombardment since January of the cities of Fallujah and Ramadi. Again, where local tribal states are in charge, however, the media tells us that ISIS has taken over, and this is simply false. In Fallujah and Ramadi, this is from what I'm hearing, it's also false in Mosul, and we wait to hear what else is coming.
I'm just so brokenhearted about what the people of Iraq and other places have had to suffer. You know, people in Vietnam, they might have kicked the U.S. out, but they're still suffering from the effects of Agent Orange and other toxins and unexploded landmines and things like that that are still happening.
Yeah.
As a doctor, Dahlia, can you tell my listeners about the horrible after effects of the U.S.'s invasion and occupation of Iraq?
Sure. You make an excellent observation of the long-term effects of our military aggressions. Since 1991, with our use of depleted uranium, this is an isotope of uranium that's extremely dense, and so we like to use it in shells and on the tips of some of the weapons, because as the Pentagon says, it can cut through a tank like a hot knife through butter, which is very exciting if you're the Pentagon.
Right.
But on impact, the depleted uranium, which I guess is formed into it's solid matter, but then it burns and aerosolizes on impact. So you have microscopic particles that go into the air and the sand and the water supply. And you've seen these effects on returning veterans from both Iraq and Afghanistan. And many of them, after the first Gulf War, was called a disease of unknown diagnosis. Because if there's no diagnosis, then the VA doesn't have to pay service-related benefits.
Right.
But for the people, they have nowhere to go. And there was, especially after 2003, there was no education or awareness being made of what were the heavily targeted areas. So there's now been an estimated over 2,000 tons of depleted uranium aerosolized throughout the country of Iraq from the U.S. and U.K.-led air assaults. And it, so these have caused significant rises in the incidence of cancers, particularly pediatric leukemias and lymphomas, cancers in kids, as well as a significant rise in birth defects. And it affects, you see a lot of it in, it's seen in, a, the cancer incidence is seen in adults as well, but children end up being severely affected because they're growing, their cells are dividing, and when radiation is introduced into that process, that's where you get the possibility for mutation, an uncontrolled mutation. So we've seen these higher incidences of cancer and birth defects throughout Iraq, but really the poster child for these defects is Fallujah, where the incidence of cancers is has been documented to be higher than that seen after Hiroshima, same for the incidence of birth defects. And there's a possibility that it was actually weapons-grade uranium that was used on that city, in addition to depleted uranium. So it's a really... you know, I know just from my family, the way they can carry on is they have extremely strong faith, and they said, okay, well, this is what can we do? This is what God decided for us, and they get up every morning, and they try to live their lives and raise their children and move forward, and so that's a tremendous impetus for me to get off my duff and keep doing whatever I can to spread information and share what I know. So again, I want to thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you and share what I'm hearing from the ground.
Well, Dahlia, you're Iraqi American, and I think you sound pretty smart, even though you are an Iraqi. And I say that, you know, I say that facetiously because, you know, I'm told mostly by the right wing that, you know, Iraqis can't take care of themselves. They're basically like savages. They don't care about their children. They don't care,
right?
You know, because they can always have another one and things, you know, very horrible things. That's what they, that's what we have to say throughout the centuries to justify genocide, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm convinced, and I tell these people, I say, I've met doctors and engineers and professors and lawyers from Iraq. Trust me, they're not ignorant backwards people, you know? So you wrote this article, and I will link it, about how Iraq is for the Iraqis, and Iraqis have enough on the ball to take care of themselves. But what can we do? What can we do to reinvigorate a peace movement that should have never gone anywhere? And what should the U.S. be doing? I don't say we when I'm talking about the empire, because I'm not part of that empire. But what should the U.S. be doing to help the people of Iraq?
I think there's the only thing, because of what we've done to Iraq and to that region, the only thing we can do is nothing. We owe reparations,
right?
By all means, we owe reparations, and every last American should be removed from Iraq, but we have no credibility there whatsoever. We are the criminal who committed the crime. We should have no part in the the next chapter. We have to if we could somehow get those leaders, and I use the term loosely, incarcerated or arrested and to stand trial. This should be our goal. This should be our focus. We have no business in Iraq. Yes, there is violence there now. That is thanks to us. We have brought unspeakable torture and violence and bloodletting to Iraq, and we have there is nothing that we can do now to help the situation, certainly not militarily. Now, what we can do here at home, I think if enough people can get motivated for it, there has to be the man and woman power for it, but civil disobedience. This is in 2003, actually. I spoke in San Francisco in 2006, I think it was, or 2007, and people told me that in 2003, the city almost stopped functioning because there were so many spontaneous demonstrations that there was gridlock. The businesses couldn't operate, and this is the kind of atmosphere we should have here. If we want to see change, things will have to change for us too. Now, San Francisco is a unique place of activism, but I would also hopefully suggest that as the pundits start talking about the 2016 presidential election, that we don't get distracted by that.
Right.
We have to focus on the issues and look at where campaigning for a Democratic candidate got us seven years ago. Now, I'm not sure that I'm ready to say campaign for the Republican candidate, but my God, did we have a stronger movement when a Republican was in office?
Yeah.
So I'm almost there, Cindy. You heard it here first.
Well, I said it in 2012 that I would prefer Romney win. So but you know, that's not a principled movement. It's a horrible, unprincipled, hypocritical movement that does stuff like that. And I'm gonna tell you, San Francisco is not that radical when there's a Democrat in power. So they're just as liberal and fake liberal as any other place. And I'm going to a protest in San Francisco tomorrow. And I'll see how that goes. I'll see how many people show up, and I'll see what the energy is about it. Because I've totally agreed with you from day one that we have to shut this empire down. And we have to say, you're not going to operate again until you bring all the troops home from everywhere and stop ruining this planet.
Absolutely. That's the thing I also have in the back of my mind, is like, we have these situations which certainly the media want to, they don't want us to think, they just tell us there's this huge danger, so put troops on the ground. There's no thought process involved, but in the larger scope of things, we have this climate change crisis that, who knows where we're going to be left with that. So I tend to, obviously, because of my personal connection, I stay focused on Iraq. But in the bigger picture, where are we headed? I think planet Earth is the Titanic. But I have the luxury of saying that I have electricity and water, and I live here in a place that profits off of genocide, off of people suffering. So on that note, we do everything we can with every breath that we have. And unfortunately, I wish I had the solution, but I think it is trial and error and just continuing to try to get to the bottom of things and to get the truth out and try to, that's my, again, I have the luxury of that. I don't live in a war zone, but that's my, the contribution I try to make to the movement.
Well, Dahlia Wasfi, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox again. And I will link your article, and we're putting up some of your YouTubes of your fabulous speeches and things like that you've given over the years. And we're really hoping that we can inspire, a principled anti-war peace movement to go forward, like you said, no matter who's president. And 2016, people just get so wrapped up in lesser evilism that they just almost, our protests and our movements almost become irrelevant.
Exactly. So we keep trying. Let's try something new this time around.
And that's pretty pathetic. So, Dahlia, is there any way my listeners can get a hold of you if they have further questions or want to be kept up to speed about what's going on?
Most of the stuff that I'm doing right now is on Facebook. I know that's CIA operated, but I'm hoping the CIA members get it so they try to learn something too.
Right.
But you can find me there, Dahlia Wofsy or Dr. Dahlia Wofsy. You can find me on YouTube. My website is liberatethis.com, though it's very neglected these days while I'm working on my book.
Right.
But really anywhere on the internet, you can track me down and please take a look at what I'm posting. And thank you again for the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, Dahlia, you give our love and solidarity to your family and personally, but actually, you know, more to the people of Iraq and you know, let them know that there's some people who have confidence in the people of Iraq.
Yeah, thank you so much. I am telling them that we don't forget about you and just, you know, hang in there and we're remembering you and so many people who don't know you are praying for you. So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, thank you again and keep in touch, okay?
All right. Thank you, Cindy.
Bye-bye. That's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for this week, and I hope you go to the links that we'll provide at cindysheehansoapbox.com, articles that Dahlia has written, speeches that Dahlia has given, and we are going to close this show with a speech she gave back in 2010, I believe, about the empire, about the warmongers, about the wars. And as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my assistant and sister, Dee Dee Miller, for being the production assistant, Mikey for helping out on the show, and you especially for listening and supporting the show. And if you do listen and support the show, while you're at CindySheehanSoapbox.com checking out the links, hit the donate link because we really are suffering from lack of donations right now. Thank you. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now. And here's Dr. Dahlia Wofsy.
We have an obligation to every last victim of this illegal aggression because all of this carnage has been done in our name. Since World War II, 90% of the casualties of war are unarmed civilians, a third of them children. Our victims have done nothing to us. From Palestine to Afghanistan to Iraq to Somalia to wherever our next target may be, their murders are not collateral damage. They are the nature of modern warfare. They don't hate us because of our freedoms. They hate us because every day we are funding and committing crimes against humanity. The so-called war on terror is a cover for our military aggression to gain control of the resources of Western Asia. This is sending the poor of this country to kill the poor of those Muslim countries. This is trading blood for oil. This is genocide. And to most of the world, we are the terrorists. In these times, remaining silent on our responsibility to the world and its future is criminal. And in light of our complicity in the supreme crimes against humanity in Iraq and Afghanistan and ongoing violations of the UN Charter and international law, how dare any American criticize the actions of legitimate resistance to illegal occupation? Our so-called enemies in Afghanistan, Iraq, Palestine, our other colonies around the world, and our inner cities here at home are struggling against the oppressive hand of empire, demanding respect for their humanity. They are labeled insurgents or terrorists for resisting rape and pillage by the white establishment, but they are our brothers and sisters in the struggle for justice. The civilians at the other end of our weapons don't have a choice, but American soldiers have choices. And while there may have been some doubt 5 years ago, today we know the truth. Our soldiers don't sacrifice for duty, honor, country. They sacrifice for Kellogg, Brown, and Root. They don't fight for America. They fight for their lives and their buddies beside them because we put them in a war zone. They're not defending our freedom. They're laying the foundation for 14 permanent military bases to defend the freedoms of ExxonMobil and British Petroleum. They're not establishing democracy. They're establishing the basis for an economic occupation to continue after the military occupation has ended. Iraqi society today, thanks to American help, is defined by house raids, death squads, checkpoints, detentions, curfews, blood in the streets, and constant violence. We must dare to speak out in support of the Iraqi people. who resist and endure the horrific existence we brought upon them through our bloodthirsty imperial crusade. We must dare to speak out in support of those American war resistors, the real military heroes who uphold their oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, including those terrorist cells in Washington, D.C., more commonly known as the legislative, executive, and judicial branches. Frederick Douglass said, "Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are people who want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the roar of its many waters. The struggle may be a moral one, or it may be a physical one, or it may be both, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. Every one of us must keep demanding, keep fighting, keep thundering, keep plowing, keep speaking, keep struggling until justice is served. No justice, no peace."